don't use words, what do we say?
Okay, using the term that you, that in relation to the
other. Let me say a master.
Or a leader.
It simply means a human being who has mastered the ability to live what he says. Don't go make it more than what it's not. Once they have lived what they have said, they have command over the atom by spoken voice. And therefore they have no other alternative than to function here as a compassionate being. Now, we the individuals who haven't mastered it look to them as a superior being. They look at us as a brother who doesn't want to accept responsibility. So they don't even look at you as any student. You're a brother of theirs that don't want to accept the responsibility of your spoken words. So they're going to dump it back on your head and tell you, don't call them masters. All they have done is master the art of living the spoken words. And they want us to accept that responsibility and make it a living excuse for ourselves.
And they set the example. They set the example.
Show
you to be done. Yeah. All right, so if a brother...
In other words, they are an elder brother.
Okay. If an elder brother is working with the son on the atomic level,
yeah,
the alphabet brother,
right,
with the seed brother, and take the machine or this atomic structure with them. They don't leave any cleanup. They don't leave any residue.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a brother who is, if I understood you correctly earlier, that's working in the gas industry, who leaves a form, but the form doesn't decompose. Can that brother, having left this non-decomposing 144 elements on the lab, rematerialize in 144 elements that brother?
Yes. Because why? Xeroxin is unlimited.
Xeroxin
is unlimited.
So then, okay, so then what is, why would one brother leave, leaving no cleanup, and another leave, choose to leave form that doesn't need to be closed, and may or may not come back to people in the capital? What's the purpose of the difference? That's what I mean.
That is to satisfy the omnipotent. The option is millions of ways to take it. But what the onlooker needs to satisfy or give them some confirmation or hope, this is what they may leave to them. Now, some individuals leave the body for others to experiment in. Others take it so you don't know if they ever existed or the figment of your imagination. This is their option. Now, some remain here, ain't going no place, but only visible or invisible when they need to disappear. So this is their option. What they're trying to convince their brothers and sisters is, once you live the spoken word, you are a free individual. Free men are lord of the self. And to be lord of the self and to be free is to take it with you, leave it to show that it doesn't really break down and you have the option to Xerox it all over the place, or be visible or invisible as you'll beat me up, Charlie.
Donald, what if I go on vacation? I leave my body to somebody who you have to bury in the ground to learn it. What is that? In other words, why would I want to have that? Wouldn't that indicate to me to learn the barrier that you haven't taken care of? totally comfortable, but if somebody else has to do something with them, don't they?
Yeah.
I mean, if other people have to, you know, the tree is going or the spirit or something.
So this is just your option you have.
So
do you want to leave it around for others to believe or be convinced that you were saying the truth when you were here with them? Or do you want to take it with you, another puzzle in your mind? You never did come, but it's possible you might have been here because your old clothes are still hanging in the closet. And this is what the picture looked like. We got those bodies to show that you actually were there. This is the perfect truth. But this is your option. Once you have arrived at the freedom of the spoken word over the atom, however you want to leave some type of conviction for your brothers and sisters, this is your option. You are not restricted. The only time you're restricted is if you lock after you can. And then they say, you just made it. But if you don't lock, they know you've made it, and therefore you have the option again of Xeroxing it. And if you take it to you, and they don't have no actual evidence you were here to show outside of your old clothes or a picture of what you look like, this again is your option. If you want to be visible or invisible, whenever you need to be, no matter how long you want to stay on the sanitary system, this is your option.
So the body is very different than rock. So you're saying a person honestly could still have the body buried under the ground.
And never rot.
And never rot. But if it does rot.
Then you didn't make it.
Okay, and what about if it's cremated?
If it's created, you can xerox it again. Now, the new picture is xeroxed after they cremated. Then Lahiri is xeroxed after they cremated. To show that the xeroxing principle overrides the fixation. Now, there was a guy by the name of Kabir. He lived a long time ago, around 1600, and he went around trying to unite Hindus and Muslims, because they had two different belief systems, into accepting the one God in themselves. Now for years he preached to both of them, and finally one day he decided he was going to leave the body. So he stood up in front of them, gave a long lecture on the unity of God, and lied down there in the tomb. Now the Hindus said, right to the crowd of people, he was us. He is one of us. And by our rights and belief system, we must cremate the body. The Muslim God said, oh no, he was with us. He lived and he taught us. And by our concept, we bury the body. After many hours of arguing back and forth to bury or cremate the body, Kabir got up and looked at them, shook his head, and disappeared right in front of their eyes. But he left them two roses in his coffin. The Hindus took their roses and cremated it. The Muslims took their roses and buried it. The coffin is too big, they lifted it, emptied it, and they don't know where the hell Kabir gone. See what fixation will do to the reality of ourselves. But Kabir lived. The records of his existence and the people who were helped by Kabir have records, but the body of Kabir is not present. But they have the buried rose and they have the burnt up ashes of the other rose. And they have the coffin still there in the Middle East where Kabir lived and nobody could see. Now he was not the only one that did that. Jesus did the same thing too. But he didn't leave nothing else but cloth, which we call the shroud of Turin, which is what his face is supposed to look like, or his body, where the actual perforation of the cut or the nails were, and that evidence that he was here on the cross. So many of these men realize that their brothers and sisters are not willing to accept the reality of themselves as yet, would leave something tangible to confuse them or impress them or take it to them so that they don't have any way to vouch for their freedom. But this is their option, their freedom. But it falls under three categories. To leave something, or not to leave something, or to be present among them and only visible when it's necessary to be visible. And the fourth situation, everybody is subject to that rut.
And that would be lost or something.
That's right.
So if our apple does anything but say, what you just seem to use, if the apple does anything but stay firm or grow, then that, the nature of that apple would work, would change. In other words, if you could hang on to it long enough and you didn't work, it would reconstitute.
But
I come back to life.
All right, here's a story not too long ago. A young couple married many years ago and were celebrating their 85th birthday together. And the minister who was remarrying them in the celebration knew them to be very old couple. And when they came and asked him to do the ceremony over in memory of the anniversary of their marriage, to his amazement, as soon as he pronounced them man and wife, their whole physical anatomy and physiology went right back to 22 years of age. And there are actually on record only people that have ever seen anything like that. Now they're asking the scientific facts, what do really happen? Can the human body revert back to a younger body after living so long in love and harmony together? And the answer is yes. Every human body has lots of the DNA in our ideas. Instant rejuvenation is possible for the human body at 84 years of age. But at 82 years of age, you have to live 2 years of unconditional love. All the things that the world has done to you, those 2 years you have to totally forgive them. And don't have a single thought in your mind for any kind of compensation or revenge. And at the end of the 84th year, your whole body and the DNA in our head will go right back to prison. So that's a fact, not a thing you love. The salamander effect. The salamander effect. You know what a salamander is?
Mm-hmm.
All right. You heard of it. It's an animal or a reptile that has the ability of revitalizing itself after it's gone through its first mature life form. And it replaces any part that has been cut off. So it will never be minus a part of its humanity. And your body has it because you are a print off of the same principle of the DNA and RNA locked up in you. But the only reason why we don't seem to have the capacity to reactivate these principles that the animal kingdom or the bird kingdom carries in them to do naturally is because we being endowed in spoken word to have command over the atom did not live the spoken word. And therefore all the misapplied decisions that you've made, you have to account for. They are no sins. They're only misapplied decisions. So a great sister once said to me, Adana, when you know God, all your good and lovely decisions are fulfilled. And thank you, sister. I appreciate that very much. I don't have anything to worry about anymore. So when you know God, that's when you know the truth, that the mouth is the key to the apple, and whatever you say is going to crystallize, then every good or lovely decision must be crystallized. So you don't have anything to worry about, you just stay up to the limit. And if you look back, you made a lot of lousy decisions when you were young, you're trying to make good ones now as you get more mature.
Isn't there also a point where things are being
we were told by our brother how to ask, but we never do it. That's why we never get the right answer. Brother Jesus told you how to ask. Do you remember what he said when he was in the body? How to ask? In his name, right, because whatever you ask, when you retreat into your innermost chamber, well, you know, your innermost chamber in your heart is a solid bowl. There is no more innermost chamber than that. It's so intimate with you, you couldn't go any closer than getting down to the nitty-gritty of what is bugging you. And if you really ask in his name, it's done after you. I don't want to sound crude, but many of us go to that solid board and don't get no relief. But if you ask in Jesus' name, you sure we get a bowel movement. A lot of people did do it to prove it and get a good, healthy body to give. Because I saw them come around like that and I said, Donna, I know what you mean now. But literally speaking, if you slow down your brain and sit down in your room and ask what is your highest good in the name of the Christ principle, I say this happens to you because you're offensive. Initiate or non-initiate.
So instead of asking the word, something specifically you qualify.
If you knew what your highest good would be, you wouldn't ask for it. It would always be obvious to you. But since you don't know what your highest good is, you have to ask it and let it occur. So that's what you have to build up in your mind. And whenever you ask in the creative consciousness that your highest good be revealed to you, it will be revealed to you. But if you're willing to take the time out to analyze what can be the highest good for a human being, you'll find that the highest good for a human being is to breathe. Think of it. So why ask for your highest good when you're already breathing? Then why not do what? Love the Lord for the opportunity to have become you to breathe. So that's why Jesus said, all of these commandments are great, but I give you a better one. And the better one was, love the Lord thy God with all of the mind, don't fall asleep now. Don't worry if you, because if you love him, you can breathe. See? That automatically makes you breathe. With all of your mind, you got to be breathing. And with all of your heart, that means your heart got to pump blood. You got to be breathing. And with all of your strength, well, if you don't breathe, you have no strength. And with all of your soul, which is the integrity of your nature, because you don't have a soul, you are a soul, a And that's the honesty of yourself. You are going to be constantly grieving. So this is truly the highest good. Now, if you're constantly breathing, can they bury you? And if you're constantly breathing till midnight eternity, will they ever bury you? So you see, immortality is only lack of will. It's the opportunity to be constantly breathing. But it's too simple to accept. But when you actually understand what you're saying to yourself, you see, there is no magic. It's just a matter of taking it step by step, breath after breath. Right. And until you see the obviousness, the thing is very nebulous. But that's why you have to clear out the nebulousness of the language and then see the actual truth. And it's not who you are, but what you are. So we're going to be here until midnight eternity because Big Daddy doesn't go out of business. So if he doesn't go out of business, where the hell are we going to go? He can't put us no place. We can only shut down our individuality into a condition called non-relating, non-consciousness called death. We cannot shut down our totality because that is God itself. How can you shut down God? The totality of you is in life. So I'm a God of the living, Jesus said. My God is of the living, not of the dead. So we have it past us to have a principle set up to phase out itself. It would have to be a principle that would be here in permanency. And the principle would have to be a single principle, one. It's the only number that can phase itself out. Divide one by one, and what you got? Figure out one. So where is it going to go? And you are one with it. Therefore, you are the same principle. I and the Father are one. The I in you is the principle in you. So where are you going to go? But you've got to have the opportunity to breathe, to recognize it. And you want that to come into understanding of your consciousness so you appreciate it moment to moment by loving the opportunity. So that's how comes that love the Lord, love the I-ness that is singularly set up as you. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So that does mean it doesn't become unconscious. It is totally ever conscious. And loving it is watching. Because you can't own it. You can't be possessed out of it. It's not possible. So as long as you're breathing and watching, then the heart is in a state of reverence. Then the breath itself is the strength to stay in that reverence is continuous. That the integrity of the honesty with yourself, knowing that you don't have to pretend to breathe. You're breathing. Plain simple breathing. You're one with the truth. Then your neighbor as yourself. Anything next to you is subject to the same laws. It doesn't matter if it's man, woman, or tree. These are objects next to you. And they have the same condition to live through. And you have to reach out and accept them as reflections of you. And why? Because the same I am principle is locked up in them. The same connotations and involvement of functioning is locked up in them. And they are just a reflection of what you have recognized, what you understand you are put together as. So the freedom is there automatically. So you're not here working to save anybody. You're working primarily to what?
Yeah. back to their breath or body so that they can wake up again, because they're in the dream until that point. So, and they will keep dreaming, which the lifetime is the same as the dreams at night until they wake up.
And then they're told whenever they wake up, what they did was the most simple thing they could have done a long time ago. Seek the kingdom of God, which is inside of them, and it's how it operates, its righteousness. That is, look at your body and see what makes it function and how it operates. And it will free you from all the so-called fixations of what you think you can acquire or overrule. If you want to show off in your behavior, you'll sooner or later find out that your breath is all you can look at inside of you that keeps you functioning, and it makes you feel that you can own the world or be the greatest competent person in the world or perform all that. But that breath will make you feel. And then after a while, you don't need to perform miracles or you don't need to own a single thing. Your breath provides you opportunity to live life consciously. Free men, women, God of yourself. And in that state, the highest opportunity is the breathing to experience ever new joy. Ever new joy means the opportunity to use ever new models. Think of that last statement. The opportunity to use as a new model, not to own it. Would you not like to have a new model equipment coming to you every time to get you more opportunity to see the work you're doing? That's what I mean, as a new model, because the creativeness is ongoing and the opportunity to use it is there. But you say you're going to own it all the time, it'll break down. So we really can never own anything outside the kingdom. They all fall apart at some point. But the opportunity to use it in its ever new model, this is our option, this is our right. I couldn't own it. I can have the opportunity to use it. And in the opportunity to use it, the need is provided already. The need is the want. The need is provided to take care of the opportunity to use it. Like Yogananda, when he first used a brand new Cadillac, after the war, and it was funny how he said, here is another Cadillac and all these people around him. And you know, one man is saying his mind, if he's a Swami, why is he driving in a brand new Cadillac? That's all of a life need to be time, huh? So he looks around and he sees the man and he read the man's mind, and he surprises the man by calling him by name, Mr. Johnson. And the guy shook up. You know. So I didn't ask this Cadillac. It's given to me as a present. In fact, it's a very poor expression of man's creativity, looking for a better model like yours. I just a pure bee of fixation to own. I want to be in the position to use it. And so the models come up every time to be used. So when you place a limitation on yourself, then it's a limitation. But if you don't do that, and you put the consciousness to flow, then the consciousness flows to you. And that's what they're trying to tell us all, that we must turn this attitude on as initiate. We must develop this consciousness that a spoken word is our privilege, our inheritance over the apple. The other day somebody brought me a book, and inside the book was a cartoon, and it said the cartoon reminded them of me. So I read the cartoon, and it was this: I'm the only brick that doesn't break down called a diamond.
Oh,
that's so nice. So that was the cartoon. So you don't break down, you're a diamond.
Back here. Thank you, David. That's not a Jonathan. Really believe when we get together, we have two choices. I speak or you ask questions. So, how about you ask questions? Well, I know you have a lot in your mind and you'd like to have it cleared up. If you can answer that, fine. But this helps us to see a common relationship sometimes when we ask questions. That one person may have the same question, the same identical question. That in this way, when we ask questions, most of us get the answers coming out. And they hear it from different viewpoints. So, I'd love to ask question. Thank you.
Well, the very first fact of pulling your head out of the ground is the fact that you're born within. Movement can be born. Look around in this room. There are no losers here. And the fact is not a statement of imagination. It's firm that cuts the cord is within. And then they cut the cord after 9 months and it stays to hear it on time. Stay as good. Everybody needs to do it. So there are no losers. If you can think all your life, you're a loser. Be my guest. That's back to the rock. But that you pull your head out of the ground to say, there's none to be afraid no more because you know you're within the ground. You're a winner. But how you move from that point and stand up and walk is the next step. Knowing that you're a winner, then you have two things to do. Go fast or go slow. Now when you go too fast, you might fall over the place and hurt yourself. So the doctors call it hyper. When you go too slow, you leave it behind. So the doctors call it hypo. But if you want to keep up with the race, you've got to go in between fast and slow. But don't panic. And every moment is beautiful, because every moment is greedy. And because we breathe, we are conscious and we can relate. And so, for the first 18 years of your life, you have a problem. Before you're born, the individuals that are reporting to you are called mom and pop. After you're born, they're called parents, and they're paying the rent for you for 18 years. They're stuck with it until they throw you out on your own again to start off, be yourself. See, they can't get around it, so if you don't perform, they'll find every way to make you recognize that the 18 years means that you want to be. And that's basic. And that's what you say, you're pulling the hell out of your life. And at the end of 18 years, at the end of high school, you have two choices. Go to work and stand your own 2 feet, or find a way to increase your education. Well, you have 12 years to do it before you contribute in practical. So from 18 to 30, those 12 years is called muck-up. 30 years of muck-up and 30 years to feel up. All you know is pulling your head out of the ground. Because you look around and see, by that time, if you didn't have any breaking up of the body or sickness, you get it pretty good. But if you start to feel the aches and the pains of 30 going on to 40, you've got to start cleaning off your act. So that's where we come into the condition of the first 30 years you're lost from nothing. Nobody can be driving that. And then after that you've got to see that because you're including yourself. So I couldn't deprive you of the joy of mucking up the first 30 years. So that's not it. And the next 30 years is spent cleaning it up because there's a virtue in it. You
virtuous and pious. Now, if you marry and have children by then, you will appreciate the parents more. You'll have to tell them the same thing they told you. So we learn to appreciate our parents after 40 years of age. We already have our own children. Then we question life as to the possible values of it. Is it really worth living every day, running down the highway, trying to stop the traffic, and see if it's going to be practical? Every night you go to sleep, and you've got to tell yourself before you go to sleep, you're going to wake up next day to go to work. Sounds familiar? You got to get up before, you got to program your brain before you go to sleep. Then you worry before you go to sleep if you can pay the bills tomorrow. And we live this kind of agony practically every night before we go to sleep. And yet we fall asleep and we forget practically everything that we said to ourselves before we go to sleep. Now comes the crazy question. Do you know who you are when you come to sleep? If you're a man or a woman? And if you don't wake up, you still don't know who you are, and they're going to bury you. Now you really use your head in the ground then. Right? So you're stuck. And 30, 40 years or 50 years, you went through what? Trying to keep up with the environment, and yet deep down you haven't come to any acceptance. Is life worth living? Is it the sleep of your bed? That's it. And then we don't know who we are when we come to sleep. And if we question beyond that point, and anyone hearing you talk about that, you're crazy. They're going to try and recommend some doctrine. You dare not talk about knowing who you are when you come to sleep. The rich man and the poor man, wise man and the ignorant man both have the same value. They don't know who they are when they come to sleep. But if any one of them discovers who they are when they come to sleep, then they may be able to get out of the frustration, the panic, fear of living in the now. Because there is nothing here but now. And now doesn't have present nor end. Now only has a sense of confidence. You confide in your beingness that you are alive, you breathe, and you don't panic, and you can cope. Anything, the environment can show you. Simply because you breathe. But if you don't breathe, it doesn't matter what they show you, it won't bug you. If you breathe and you can cope with it, you're still on top of the body or the journey of knowing what you are. And last but not least, when you know what you are, then you come to truth and can get up and live without sleeping anymore. You have found out what all the great things in the world have discovered. What they discovered was you and the creative life are one in the same. There isn't anything here but creative life existing in human form, pure breath, and the understanding is the freedom. And this is what the brother Jesus says, free men are Lord yourself. And I am a father of one. You and the creative principle are one in the same. I'm going to find a God sitting on the shoulder of your feet again. That you can tell yourself you live to die, or you live to retire to die. And when you get there, you'll be disappointed because you're in there ready for you. Because the brother Jesus said, I, God, am the living, I'm not the dead.